This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was David Reifman, who is the commissioner of the City of Chicago Department of Planning and Development. Well, certainly the City of Chicago is not what Jean-Baptiste Point du Sable planned when he had his farmhouse and outbuildings back there in the 1780s and 90s. Reifman talked about development going on in the City of Chicago that will leave us speechless. For example, the site of the Tribune printing plant along the north branch of the river. There are plans for 28,000 jobs in that area, $3.2 billion investment, 4,400 residential units. He talked about the Lincoln Yards project, 10,000 construction jobs, 20,000 permanent jobs, the realigning of streets and new vehicular bridges. He talked about the 78, the area around Roosevelt and Clark Street, new roadways, the relocation of Metro tracks, a new mass transit station. USX, the United States Steel Plant, out on the far southeast side of Chicago. He says this is the largest and hardest project to really get going. But he said this is a very dynamic time for the City of Chicago. Private investment, investments from universities, government investments. It's probably the most progressive development period the City of Chicago has ever had. And he said, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, although he will be leaving office in April, is not satisfied. His legacy, Reifman predicted, will be growth and equity. Policies and projects, he said, will be equally divided between downtown and various neighborhoods. He said that 125,000 new jobs in Chicago have been created since 2016. More property and tax revenue for the City of Chicago. The Neighborhood Opportunity Improvement Program was scheduled to generate $10 to $12 million in revenue. But so far, they have generated $50 to $60 million, and the city's been able to engage in grants in various neighborhoods, West Side, South Side, and the North Side of Chicago. He talked about the new Salesforce building, the third final tower at Wolf Point, the 110 North Wacker, the Bank of America building that will be the biggest financial building in the City of Chicago since 1990. He talked about the old post office, which, among other things, will have 1,800 employees of Walgreens Corporation moving in. $1 billion is being set aside to redevelop Union Station. We'll have a new neighborhood in Chicago right across from Holy Name Cathedral called Cathedral Square. And at 725 West Randolph, we'll have the tallest building west of the river of the Chicago River. He described what has gone on in the Fulton Market area. And, of course, people said there's been so much development there, we can no longer park our car, but we have to use valet service. All in all, Reisman painted a picture of mega projects, many projects, and a great deal of activity going on in the coming years in the City of Chicago.
Our next speaker is a great supporter of the City Club of Chicago, and every time we ask him for civic or charitable help, Misericordia, Special Olympics, anything, the answer is always yes. Not let me check my schedule, this, that, anything else. We are enormously grateful. Please welcome the mayor of all of Chicago, the most American of American cities, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Your Honor.
Thank God the person I'm speaking just got back in the room. Otherwise, I was going to have to give you my 12-point health care plan. The committee, you guys got accelerated. Reifman's upstairs in the restroom, and I was going to say, like, well, let me start with coverage before I get to cost on my health care plan. You know, let me say this. I want to say something about David personally, but before I get that, he's going to run through a lot that's happening in the City of Chicago, the projects that are going on from President Obama's library that's coming to the City of Chicago, what's happening at Lincoln Yards, Michael Reese, across the city. What won't get I think all the attention it deserves, obviously because the other stuff that is going on, and that may be the focus of his conversation. The biggest, or one of the biggest challenges a mayor has today of a major city is how do you build and construct what I call inclusive economic growth, so that every part of the city is growing and people see the opportunities, the jobs, the employment that are coming to the city of Chicago also affect their lives. 2 years ago, we started something called Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. That as development happened in the central business district of the city of Chicago, we made sure that that became the seed capital and the venture capital for neighborhood businesses throughout the city of Chicago, in our neighborhoods that make up the retail economy and the quality of life of our neighborhood. And I also think then, without a doubt, is that it created a sense of unity that somehow what was happening in the central business district did not come either at expense or somehow damage your neighborhood economy. And when we created the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund about 2 years ago, we thought we were going to do about $10, $12 million. And what this, in the end of the day, if you don't know about it, you really should, as people that take an interest in the future of the city of Chicago, we thought that maybe we would do about $10 million, $12 million in development that was happening. We're now on track to north of $50 to $60 million in that fund to help our way in excess of what we projected. And what that goes to is to coffee shops, bakeries, cultural institutions in your neighborhood that cannot get a bank effort for $100,000 or $200,000. The city of Chicago doesn't do a loan, straight out grant, no interest, you don't have to pay for it, and it helps entities that are knocking down a wall, want to put 12 more tables for their restaurant, bakery shops that exist on the south side that now have something on the west side in the Austin community. All the things that you want to see in your neighborhood that we take for granted that are not happening in all parts of the city. And the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund is unique to the city of Chicago. And it's, as I said, it's north of $50 million. And that helps around 500 to 600 businesses across the city of Chicago. And it's growing. So when you saw the Salesforce Tower coming, that's going to fund and put millions of dollars into the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. It won't get the attention it deserves. I will just tell you, as the mayor that inaugurated with David Reifman's direction, Artie's direction, Rebecca's participation in the office, I think it's one of the better accomplishments, and I know other cities are now looking to it as a model of what is going. And that is also in partnership with where we have taken our TIF dollars, and almost 80% of our TIF dollars now go to public schools, public libraries, public transportation, public parks in our neighborhoods. And those two investments are helping, I think, see a renaissance in neighborhoods across the city of Chicago that are essential. And in the end of the day, what I want to say about David is he had a very successful legal career. He had a very strong job with a great firm doing a lot of work. But he knew that was on one side of the table, and that if you really wanted to make a difference and bring equity, but also a vision to the city to see the type of growth we want to see in the city of Chicago, that you had to, one day you had to actually have the commissioner position of planning and development. And to take that to a level, and I was proud when I asked him to do public service, that you could always do what you're doing in the private sector, but this is a unique opportunity and a unique moment in the city. Given that the type of growth that we're having, I don't know if you know this, but the city of Chicago is experiencing not only the highest employment on record, the lowest unemployment on record, the biggest drop of unemployment of the 10 largest cities last year here in the city of Chicago. But yeah, that is a... And the goal is to make sure, and I say this, is that whether a child has a perspective on the city, when you think about our central business district, in many ways, it's the image of the city to itself and the image of our city to the world. And if a child that comes out of a school in Roseland looks to that city, and a child coming out of a school in Ravenswood looks to that city, or Wildwood or Woodlawn or Edgewater or Englewood, if they all see this incredible majestic buildings and development and the power it represents, the optimism it represents, and they look at it and their perspective is, that's my city, that's my home, I got one word for London, Berlin, Beijing, Tokyo. Watch out, Chicago's coming for you. But if a child's perspective in Roseland is different than the child's perspective in Ravenswood, and the child's perspective in Woodlawn is different than the child's perspective in Wildwood, we will never be what we can be. We'll always fall short. And one of the most important things that you can do is the type of planning and development that ensures that all parts of the city are growing and growing together, and we're bringing all the economic development resources the city has to bear on that challenge. And David has given up a very lucrative private sector job to contribute to, I think, an unprecedented time in the city. So at this unique moment, at a unique time, and a point in history for the city, we have a unique person with a set of values that I think reflect where we want to go as a city of Chicago. David Reifman.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Mayor and Jay and everyone else. Thank you for having me here today, and I'm pleased to be back here. And just a couple quick things before I get into it. I was here about a year and a half ago, and I was told that I spoke very quickly and for a very long time. I didn't notice. So I worked really hard to try to get this talk down to about 30 minutes. I thought I'd keep it breezy and speak slowly. And I'm really sorry to report that I just can't do it. I have a lot to say, and I have a lot to say fast, so I apologize in advance. Second, and most importantly, I want to recognize some of the people in the room, the people from the Department of Planning and Development, from the Mayor's Office staff, from the Department of Transportation, from our Law Department, everyone here today. Everything I'm talking about is really a collective team effort, and I want to thank and acknowledge their hard, committed work. So if those people could quickly stand, Mayor's Office, DPD, CDOT, all the law, anyone who's here, just quickly acknowledge them. So I'm going to use my time today to talk about what we're doing under Mayor Emanuel to move the city forward through policies and projects that support a strong downtown and strong neighborhoods. Our approach is driven by equitable development policies that help ensure that all of Chicago benefits from the public and private commitments that have created more than 125,000 jobs and billions of dollars of new investment since the mayor began his second term. What we have today is a comprehensive framework for equitable development policies the city never had before. This framework directly and deliberately supports neighborhoods and the central area through mutually beneficial development policies. Within this context, I'll specifically talk about how we have fostered the strength and momentum of our strongest neighborhoods while fueling sustainable economic investment in underserved neighborhoods, helping our affordable housing initiatives where they're needed most, improving our industrial corridors for both new and traditional uses, and enhancing the employment opportunities of minority and women-owned businesses and workers. And I'll barely be scratching the surface of the things that we're trying to do. And I want to start by recapping some of the major projects that are expanding the reach and influence of the central area economy on behalf of the entire city. And this impact is felt in numerous ways, including an increasing share of property taxes, which means our residents carry less of the tax burden, a more centralized workforce that benefits from all of the transit options that converge on the central area, more social capital that results from a dense and dynamic network of employment skills and abilities, and tens of thousands of new jobs for residents in every neighborhood throughout Chicago. So let's go through some of the headline projects, starting with the one the mayor just talked about. This is our most recent corporate announcement that will initially bring at least 1,000 technology jobs to the city and potentially 5,000 over time. It involves Salesforce, one of the world's leading software companies, which will anchor the third and final tower at Wolf Point. This announcement just 10 days ago is the latest validation of the increasingly important technology and innovation sectors and how our focus on the value of the riverfront has resulted in billions of dollars of new investment. It's the same story at 110 North Wacker, which will be the new home to Bank of America, Chicago's tallest purely commercial building since 1990. And of course, the old post office, where Walgreens has committed to locate 1,800 employees in 200,000 square feet as the first of multiple tenants. This development resulted from a request for proposals and an eminent domain process we initiated when I first took this job. Again, this is a fantastic addition to the mayor's goals to grow the high-tech job sector, to create a public greenway along the river's entire length, as well as to complete the restoration of what was the city's biggest white elephant. At Union Station, a new 50-story office building by Riverside and Amtrak is part of a $1 billion redevelopment that will modernize the city's busiest transit hub and add 400 hotel rooms to the upper floors of the historic head house. It also involves 1.5 acres of parkland and nearly 3,000 construction jobs. Now, I cannot overstate the importance of projects like Salesforce, Walgreens, Bank of America, McDonald's, and so many others to enhance Chicago's position as a global city and its ability to attract top talent and capital investment. And our current success is a testament to the mayor's relentless focus, hands-on commitment, and his ability to close. Other significant new developments we approved this year include Cathedral Square, a venture of JDL Development in Sterling Bay with two mixed-use office towers designed by Getch and Hartshorne Plunkard, and 725 West Randolph, a 58-story high-rise by Related Midwest, which is the tallest building west of the river, and Lakeshore East, which has $1.1 billion for three new towers planned, a venture of Lendlease and Magellan with 3,000 construction jobs and completing the very last vacant sites in Lakeshore East. These Fulton Market projects are part of the expanded downtown zoning district the City Council approved 2 years ago to accommodate market demand. It's critical to Chicago's future that we maintain and continue to capture this growth, not just to support the strength of the downtown market, but to provide valuable resources for the rest of the city. And a key tool to accomplish this, as the mayor talked about, is through our revamped downtown bonus system, which enables increased floor area for voluntary payments that are allocated towards specific neighborhood funds, 80% for the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, 10% for citywide Adopt-a-Landmark funds, and 10% for infrastructure in the local area of the project. This approach is a key pillar in our planning for neighborhood development while allowing significant density and growth that Chicago needs to thrive. And I'm proud to tell you that in 2 short years, and this is a little beyond what the mayor talked about, the Neighborhood Opportunity Bonus has generated more than $200 million in commitments already and has collected almost $50 million to date. Thank you. Of the nearly four dozen projects that have been approved for bonuses, half are on the Near West Side, most within walking distance of the new Morgan train stop along the Green Line. It's this kind of transit investment that provides Chicago with competitive advantages over other cities and locations. Construction in the Fulton Market area since 2016 alone represents almost $2.5 billion in private investment that's largely predicated on the $50 million Morgan Street station. This has resulted in nearly 20,000 permanent jobs and almost 7,000 construction jobs. And this slide shows the locations of projects that are utilizing the bonus and extending the reach of downtown beyond its traditional western boundaries. The new jobs are coming from these locations are positive for the entire Chicago region. Access to jobs from neighborhoods is as important as job creation within neighborhoods, and all of our improvements to the Red Line north and south, as well as the infill stations along the Green Line, such as the new station at Lake and Damon, are enabling more and more people to access local employment options. With nearly 600,000 jobs downtown, more than half are filled by Chicago residents. Now, with all this in mind, let's shift and talk about how we're leveraging downtown strength and growth to create equitable resources in numerous ways. And I want to begin this discussion with the executive order the mayor issued last year that requires the city's largest private construction projects to include minority and women-owned businesses and workers. Today, there is a general consensus that 7% of Chicago's trades are represented by African Americans, 25% by Latinos, and 1% by women. These stats do not reflect the reality of our racial and gender composition. To correct that, the executive order requires for the first time that the city's largest private construction projects seek 26% minority firm participation and 6% women-owned firm participation. That's about 35,000 construction jobs pending from the last year's worth of approvals alone. And this represents an unprecedented opportunity to institutionalize the equitable allocation of resources. to help build capacity for minority and women-owned firms to meet the objectives of the executive order. Julia Stash and the MacArthur Foundation have been convening a Chicago Construction Opportunity Group that specifically is tasked to help more MWBE businesses and workforce gain access to the industry. This effort is led by Lori Healy and Terry Peterson, with the participation of Chicago's largest and most prominent developers and all the prominent trade organizations. As these projects continue to develop, so will the capacity of local MWBE firms and workforce, which means the people who are actually building the central area truly represent the people who live in our neighborhoods. The neighborhoods are where the vast majority of our city-supported housing, commercial, and industrial initiatives are taking place, along with the equitable development policies that are making an impact across the board. There's a common platitude that suggests that neighborhood development takes a backseat to the central area, but nothing could be further from the truth. Let's start by recognizing that neighborhood development is hard, in fact, very hard, especially in the areas that have been plagued by a legacy of private disinvestment. And we do what we can with limited and competitive public resources. We're working with our sister agencies and private partners on numerous projects and initiatives that include affordable housing, public transit, shopping, culture, jobs, schools, and other amenities. We're filling the gaps that the private market can't or won't fill, leveraging the strength of a market itself to achieve this goal. And one of our signature accomplishments, as the mayor said, is the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. The Neighborhood Opportunity Fund specifically targets the South and West Side commercial corridors that support both businesses and jobs for neighborhood residents. These areas get 80% of the revenues from the Downtown Bonus Fund, which today represents about $160 million of commitments and almost $40 million already collected. And just to kind of highlight this in simple terms, there's a straight line from McDonald's moving its headquarters downtown 2 years ago to the first $3.2 million we received for this fund. Now, what this slide shows is the location of almost 100 businesses that are already being supported through the program to date and the neighborhood in which these businesses are eligible to apply for funding. We identified these areas by a variety of factors, including household income, poverty rates, single-parent households, education rate, and other criteria. The bulk of the projects are getting up to $250,000 in grants. And as the mayor said, these are grants. They're not loans, which is very, very important. And these awards are based on a project's ability to have a positive catalytic impact on a commercial corridor and provide goods or services where they're currently lacking. Some of the key commercial corridors throughout the city include 47th Street in Bronzeville, 75th Street in Chatham, 26th Street in South Lawndale, and Madison Street in Austin and East Garfield Park. And I'd like to mention some of those success stories today, like Brown Sugar Bakery, run by entrepreneur Stephanie Hart, and Mickey's Restaurant, which is replacing a vacant storefront along Stony Island with classic American comfort food, and Sean Michelle's Ice Cream, and Sip and Savor's new location in the historic Rosenwald Apartments. There's also BJ Market and Bakery in Chatham, Coleman's Barbecue in Austin, Metropolitan Grocery in Bronzeville, and many other locations that are represented by this slide. Now, given the success of the program, we've also started allocating grants for projects that exceed $250,000, which requires City Council approval. But two that we've selected early are the Kieran Center for the Arts, which is rehabbing a 1,000-seat auditorium as a performing arts center in Austin, and Enlace, which is rehabbing a space for a tech incubator in Little Village. We've got a long way to go to restore these neighborhood shopping districts, but we know this tool will play a critical role in their transformation. We also continue to use other tried-and-true resources like TIF and land sales, and I'll go through some of the current projects quickly, but realize they all leverage city resources to meet goals that their respective neighborhoods want and need. In South Shore, we've been working on a new Shop and Save grocery store at 71st and Jeffrey, the only one of 11 Dominick's locations in Chicago that was not replaced by Mariano's or Whole Foods or another grocer, resulting in a food desert within a vintage Southside commercial corridor. This took years of work, including a grocery store task force, threats of eminent domain, an RFP, millions of dollars of city assistance, and literally hundreds of hard hours of staff attention to make this project work for local residents. Here are two projects the city is supporting to help revitalize North Lawndale. The first is UCAN on the former Sears Roebuck campus, which includes housing and mentoring for 70 abused and at-risk youth, and Ogden Commons, which the mayor announced last month, a $200 million 10-acre mixed-use project led by the Habitat Company with 120,000 square feet of commercial and retail space, plus hundreds of mixed-use housing units. One of our most significant neighborhood accomplishments this year is the Uptown Theater. This has been the Northside's biggest white elephant, but not for much longer. We're finalizing a $75 million redevelopment project, which includes $13 million in TIF and $3 million in citywide adopt-a-landmark funds that were generated by the downtown bonus system. It's been more than 35 years since the theater closed. I have to say, I'm old enough to have been a person to have seen a show at the Uptown Theater, which makes this the most anticipated restoration project in the city's history. Working with our landmarks and planning and zoning staff, the work by JAM and Farpoint will include a full-blown restoration of the interiors and exteriors and new marquees on all three lobbies. It's estimated to draw 250,000 visitors annually to live music and stage shows and be a catalyst for new retail, restaurants, and venues, and the mayor's vision for a revived and dynamic entertainment district. As Chris Jones of the Trib wrote last week, this is a significant rescue job for the arts in Chicago. Doubledoor has recently announced its plan to open its Wicker Park location, to reopen its Wicker Park location in the nearby Wilson Avenue Theater, which is itself near the completely refurbished Wilson Avenue CTA station, and reconstruction of the Lawrence Avenue L-stop as part of the RPM Transit TIF project will further support this vision. Now, another way we support neighborhood development and revitalization is through innovative housing projects and policies. The Pullman Art Space Loft is another citywide adopt-a-landmark recipient and is the first multifamily residential building in Pullman in 50 years. Here are three neighborhood projects that were developed through a design contest I mentioned last year, resulting in the selection of three architects that designed co-located branch libraries and multifamily and senior buildings that will start opening this January. Designed by John Ronan Architects, Perkins & Will, Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, with funding from a combination of city and CHA resources. Now, I want to take a little time to discuss how our housing efforts specifically, which is more than projects and subsidies. We're in the final month of a five-year housing plan that established a vision to create and preserve more than 40,000 units through $1.3 billion in coordinated public and private investment. And we're about to launch a new five-year plan, which is a collaborative effort to develop the city's housing, investment, and policy priorities for 2019 through 2023, which is going to City Council on Wednesday. This plan is also more than goals and strategies. It's a $1.4 billion vision to support 40,000 housing units that meet the needs of our residents. The mayor summarizes the essence of the plan in three words: development without displacement. The framework for the years 2019 to 2023 results from an inclusive seven-month planning process that involved the assistance of approximately 120 housing professionals, more than twice as many as participated in the last five-year plan. This will be the sixth plan the city has done, and core priorities include the recognition that the city's housing markets require different types of resources. There are lower-cost markets, there are moderate-cost markets, there are high-cost markets, and each has its own needs for city assistance, whether it involves access to affordable rental stock, homeownership opportunities, support for people with special needs, and tools to ensure the resilience of working families threatened by private investment. Part of the planning process included a recommendation to start a new housing department, which will be formed effective January 1st, using DPD's Housing Bureau as the core component. The new department will implement the forthcoming five-year plan while partnering on a variety of public and private sector initiatives that underscores access to quality housing as the fundamental quality of life amenity for every neighborhood. The last time the city had an independent housing department was 2008, and it's time for a new one, led by a cabinet-level position to implement and bring fresh eyes to housing projects and policies. Now, I want to quickly go through a broad range of housing project types that the department continues to support through tax credits, through loans, through TIF, bond issues, land, and other resources. The Pennycuff Apartments are being developed by the nonprofit Metropolitan Housing Development Corporation on Milwaukee Avenue, which will include 41 affordable apartments and 47 CHA project-based units. It's the city's largest LGBTQ-friendly building to date and builds off of the earlier success of Lakeview's Town Hall Apartments, which opened in 2014. La Casa Norte is being developed on North Avenue in Humboldt Park, which will have 25 units targeted to homeless, near homeless, or disabled individuals, and will include health care and wellness resources. And city support includes TIF and loans. The Roosevelt Road Veterans Housing Project, being developed by a Safe Haven Foundation with assistance from the CHA, involves a 90-unit building, including a mix of studios and one-bedroom apartments for homeless and disabled veterans, and on-site job training, substance abuse treatment, and mental health counseling. And city support includes donated land and donations tax credit equity. Here are the Carling and Mark Twain SROs on Chicago's Near North Side, which are prime examples of the success of the mayor's SRO initiative, which is preserving these and other buildings as the housing of last resort throughout Chicago. To date, the initiative has preserved 11 SROs consisting of more than 1,500 units, and more than 700 units in approximately 11 other SRO buildings are currently pending preservation. The future housing department's work will go well beyond projects. It includes initiatives that address broader community needs, especially involving gentrification and displacement. And I want to quickly discuss the Affordable Requirements Ordinance, or the ARO, which has been a tremendous success in leveraging affordability through the private development process. The ARO has a twofold purpose: to create affordable housing for working families and to generate revenues to support affordable housing citywide. It's an innovative and cost-neutral way of securing public benefits of at least 10% affordability in new projects in exchange for city assistance involving zoning, land, or financing. And since it was amended in 2015, the ARO has generated the equivalent of about 1,000 units. Last summer, we worked with Alderman Burnett, Alderman Moreno, and Alderman Irvin to create a new pilot program to test the removal of in-lieu fees in two rapidly gentrifying areas on the northwest and near west sides, where many long-term residents are struggling with the impact of private investment on their taxes and rent. New projects within their boundaries include up to 20% affordable units, potentially creating almost 2,000 new affordable units based on market activity. One of the concerns that we have is that the on-site approach decreases the revenues that we receive from in-lieu fees for new construction projects, home loan programs, and rental subsidies for very low-income residents. So we'll monitor the overall impact carefully over the next 2 years, while at the same time using the funds we receive to develop programs like our 606 grant program, providing forgivable loans to income-eligible homeowners along the 606, our new preservation of existing affordable rental PAIR, I mean, who says DPD doesn't know how to market, which provides financial assistance to multifamily residential buildings in exchange for affordable rental covenants of 30 years, and the Building Neighborhoods and Affordable Homes program, which is providing up to $60,000 in purchase price assistance to qualifying homebuyers in portions of Englewood, North and South Lawndale, Humboldt Park, Garfield Park, and Woodlawn. Pilsen and Little Village are newer areas where we're using an ARO pilot to combat displacement, along with several other measures that represent a comprehensive community preservation strategy we're implementing with community stakeholders, along with Alderman Solis, Alderman Munoz, and Alderman Cardenas. And as you likely know, Pilsen and Little Village evolved as the Center for Mexican Life in the Chicago area over the last 50 years. Today, more than 80% of its 115,000 residents identify as Latino, compared to 29% citywide. Now, a component of our strategy includes a new landmark district to preserve the historic character of 18th Street and Blue Island that the Landmarks Commission recommended last week. Another component is the ARO pilot I just mentioned that will increase affordability to 20%. And will also include provisions to increase the number of family-sized units in each project by refining the mandate that says that affordable units must be the same size as the other units in the building. So, for example, if you're developing a building with all one-bedroom apartments, our Affordable Requirements Ordinance would require that you do 10% one-bedroom affordable apartments. And we're working on a system here that would pioneer a credit system that would allow you, instead of providing one-for-one, but to have kind of a bedroom equivalency to do more family-sized units. It's something that advocates have been looking for a long time, and it's the type of innovation from the pilots that we should look to apply citywide. We'll increase developer in-lieu fees by $50,000 per unit. We'll add resources along the lines of the PAIR program I just mentioned, or forgivable loans to owner-occupants that upgrade their properties similar to the 606 program. This effort and this community strategy includes an industrial component that I'll get to in just a moment, as well as open space improvements like the planned Paseo that will run along an old rail line through portions of both Pilsen and Little Village. One second. Now, as we continue to use resources for more comprehensive community preservation and enhancement strategies, it's important to spend a few minutes on the biggest economic investment in the history of the South Side, the Obama Presidential Center in Jackson Park. This fall, we completed all the City Council requirements for the $500 million project to move forward, including a master agreement, a use agreement, and an agreement for the improvement of nearby roadways led by Commissioner Sheinfeld. And as is widely known, the center will create new tourism and jobs, as well as hundreds of millions of dollars for local businesses in the years to come. Now, to ensure that the impact benefits current and longtime neighborhood stakeholders, we're working hard on a multi-part, community-based process. Though the Obama Center is new, our track record for successful community benefits in this part of Chicago is not. Our work with local developers like POA through the Choice Neighborhood Grant and with sister agencies and community members have generated hundreds of millions of dollars in community benefits in recent years. Each improvement was subject to substantial public process and review, resulting in hundreds of new affordable homes on the former Grove Park site in Tryon and Lofts, the preservation of the Strand, Woodlawn's last apartment hotel, the reoccupation of hundreds of foreclosed homes through the micro market recovery program, the development of the Metro Squash Recreation Education Complex, a new transit-oriented retail and residential building called Woodlawn Station, new schools like the U of C Charter and Hyde Park Day Schools, new cultural resources, planned upgrades to the 63rd and Cottage CTA Green Line Station, and a Jewel Osco, which will be the first new supermarket in 50 years that's opening in March. Now, I want to pause just for a quick aside. I'll get back to Woodlawn in 1 second. I want to note our work in food deserts. Whole Foods in Englewood, Shop and Save in South Shore, Jewel in Woodlawn, and several others we continue to work on. These are significant accomplishments that involved hundreds of hours of hard and office thankless work and years of relationship building, starting at the top with the mayor's relentless follow-up at the highest levels of these grocers, and continuing with me, with Artie Kotak, with numerous city departments, and all the way down through our dedicated staff. Now, in Woodlawn, the city owns about 220 vacant lots, two-thirds of which are zoned residential. These lots represent much more than vacant land. They provide opportunities to create amenities and wealth for existing residents, workers, and businesses. They'll also be key tools to address concerns about affordability and displacement and a relative lack of middle-class demographics. Their redevelopment will move forward through a community engagement process that will determine how they can best serve neighborhood needs, whether for mixed-income housing, new retail, community facilities, and other uses. And these initiatives will have layered resources that could include rental and home buyer assistance, transit-oriented development incentives, neighborhood opportunity funding, TIF, tax credits, loans, grants, and other resources that can have a catalytic impact on achieving neighborhood goals. The community-based approach includes collaborations with numerous local stakeholders that will help implement and coordinate inclusive development activity not only in Woodlawn, but also in South Shore and in Washington Park, which is also beginning to experience similar benefits that we're preparing for now through select community improvements involving affordable housing, transit, industry, and the arts, which in and of itself has a significant role in revitalizing neighborhoods. The Clio Art Residences at 55th and Michigan are 58 units for artists and families and 5,000 square feet of retail and artist studio space on the ground floor. The Garfield Gateway Initiative involves $50 million of CTA improvements, which will enhance customer amenities and install public art, as well as streetscape. And this is a key component of the corridor's revitalization that includes the Arts Block, a partnership with artist Theaster Gates and the University of Chicago's Arts and Public Life Initiative, which aims to boost Garfield Boulevard through cultural, civic, and commercial spaces and programs, including a $1.8 million arts incubator adjacent to the historic Station House, and the Green Line Performing Arts Center, a new professional theater that just opened on Garfield Boulevard last month. Right nearby is Excess Tennis Village, the home of the largest minority-owned tennis organization in the country with 27 indoor and outdoor courts, serving 4,000 students. And also nearby, the Schultz Bakery, an iconic industrial building that is going to be comprehensively redeveloped as a technology center. This is an important project that revitalizes and reuses one of Washington Park's oldest industrial assets and a good point of departure to discuss how our industrial initiatives are also contributing to community revitalization efforts citywide. Obviously, industry is an important and historic aspect of our economy that we're seeking to modernize for future generations. About two-thirds of the land that's zoned for manufacturing in the city is currently within one of our 26 designated industrial corridors, with more than half of the corridors having planned manufacturing district, or PMD, zoning that severely limit certain uses. Not all of these uses align with our industrial development or market needs, so we're transforming our policies to help Chicago maintain its competitive advantages for 21st century jobs growth. To date, we've removed the PMD designation for the eastern portion of the Kinzie Industrial Corridor and for the southern and northern portions of the North Branch Industrial Corridor. And part of this process includes a new industrial system fee that puts a price on zoning changes from PMD to other uses. And we'll use these fees to support projects in those industrial corridors that are still viable for logistics, traditional manufacturing, and related industrial uses. So in the Kinzie corridor, we removed about 63 acres from the old PMD, and here's a few projects that are going to pay into the industrial fee system, by the way, in addition to paying the downtown bonus to the downtown bonus fee as part of this area's transition. Now, while this program is still in its infancy, future zoning changes, potentially involving a conservative 300 acres of land, could generate more than $150 million for resources citywide. And a type of use the fees could support is the brand new hatchery complex that the mayor opened last week on the west side at Lake Kinzie in East Garfield Park. It's a new food and beverage business incubator in the Kinzie corridor that will provide shared workspaces and resources for food and beverage entrepreneurs. This is a $35 million project, which is a partnership between local nonprofits, Acción Chicago, ICNC, and IFF, along with two corporate partners, the Kellogg Company and Conagra Brands, which is supporting the project in conjunction with its headquarters relocation to Chicago. Rick Bayless will be leading a chef training program, and it will create 150 jobs in the first year, which will further strengthen Chicago's food and beverage industry, which is currently second in the country with 4,500 companies, 130,000 employees, and $32 billion in sales. This is a project that Hilco is developing in the Little Village Industrial Corridor. And the review and approval of this project was part of our industrial modernization process, where a primary emphasis is creating environmentally sustainable head-of-household jobs for the community. It's on the site of the former Crawford Power Plant that the mayor convinced ComEd to close in 2012. This will be a $100 million distribution center with 180 head-of-household jobs and 350 construction jobs, extensive open space and landscaping that includes more than 600 trees, right on the river, infrastructure for electric trucks and cars, solar panels, traffic signal improvements and other enhancement, and it leverages the transportation advantages of this area along I-55, not unlike the new Federal Express distribution center that opened in Pilsen in 2017. Our industrial efforts are also bearing fruit on the far south side, where Gotham Greens is building its second greenhouse in the Pullman Industrial Corridor, in addition to the one on top of the new Methods Product Plant, not even so new anymore, a couple years, Methods Product Plant, which will employ 60 more people. And that is near the new Whole Foods Distribution Center, which serves 70 Whole Foods grocery stores in the Midwest and Ontario with 150 jobs. Here's one of our Southside mega projects that is helping to revitalize a former steel mill site in the Calumet Industrial Corridor. Developed by North Point on 196 acres, it's a $165 million transportation and distribution project with 2.2 million square feet of logistics space and more than 1,200 permanent and temporary jobs. We're creating a new TIF district to support environmental remediation and reconstruction of Burley Avenue, among other things. Now, it's worth noting that we included a portion of the site as part of the new Federal Opportunity Zone legislation, which is getting some attention for its potential impact on underinvested neighborhoods across the state and the entire country. So let's take a brief look at this program and how it could impact our neighborhood strategies. And generally, it's based on a tax incentive for capital gains investments in a designated zone, and the longer the gains remain invested, the more they can be written off. Now, we've been preparing for the program and refined where they make the most sense for Chicago. And we only had a limited number of census tracts we could designate, 135, which represents only 25% of the otherwise eligible tracts in Chicago. So we went beyond federal baseline requirements and added additional criteria to refine our zones to make these really the places that would need the investment the most. Places with unemployment of more than 20%, median family income of less than $38,000, and a poverty rate of 30% or more. We also worked with local aldermen and considered what areas had the most investment potential. Our eligible zones are home to almost 1 million people, so we want to leverage this resource to the greatest extent possible. But it's still too early to predict the impact because of a continuing lack of federal guidance and because fundamental market issues remain. Will these designations make previously uneconomic projects viable, resulting in significant investment in underserved areas? Or will they only make planned and existing projects in gentrifying areas more profitable? The true effectiveness of the program remains a big open question, and we are hopeful it will achieve positive results. But meanwhile, we'll continue to advance our most important priorities for the entire city's economic growth. The last topic I want to address involves some of the other key projects that are revitalizing neighborhoods and what today constitutes some of the most important priorities to support the city's economic growth, what I informally call the mega projects. Now, these major development opportunities include the 62 acres at Roosevelt and Clark, known as the 78. There's the Tribune site on the North Branch and known as the River District. The property around the former Finkel plant and also on the North Branch, known as Lincoln Yards. The Michael Reese site on Lake Michigan in Bronzeville, the USX site on Lake Michigan at the mouth of the Calumet River, and the North Point site I just mentioned. Each of these sites is largely vacant, and each has been held back for decades due to declining industrial demand, outdated zoning, lack of infrastructure, significant physical impediments, environmental contamination, poor access, and so on. Each one is at a different stage of development, but each one continues to progress. All of the sites require playing the long game over multiple cycles with 5, 10, 15, and 20-year milestones. Collectively, they represent tremendous opportunities for new investment, jobs, and taxes that will benefit the entire city, and an amazing competitive advantage for Chicago and one of the main reasons we were able to effectively compete for the Amazon bid. Now, though we lost Amazon, the process was a catalyst to move these sites forward with nearly $20 billion in planned private investments that will generate tens of thousands of permanent and temporary jobs, including a substantial MWBE component, tens of millions of dollars of financial resources for neighborhood business corridors through the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund and the Industrial Corridor System Fee, thousands of affordable housing through the ARO, hundreds of millions of dollars in new taxes, and other benefits that will make our economy more sustainable, resilient, and equitable. All the equitable development policies I've been describing are coalescing around the megasites. And our dilemma is how to pay for the significant infrastructure costs without the ability to rely on federal or state resources, without raising taxes, and without creating risk for the city. Part of the answer, of course, is that the developers of these sites will shoulder their fair share of development costs, as we require in all planned developments, both large and small. But many of the improvements go to regional needs, or address both existing problems while accommodating new impacts, or are necessary to truly maximize the full public benefits potential these developments offer that narrow market factors alone would not justify. And to achieve these broader goals, we're proposing the creation of several new and enhanced TIF districts. Under Mayor Emanuel, TIF has been used primarily and transparently for infrastructure and public improvements, which is consistent with his philosophy to invest in ways that make Chicago attractive and competitive for companies, not to provide incentives to companies. Despite the facts, misinformation and confusion about TIF remains widespread, so let's be clear about several things. First, TIF does not take money from the school system. Rather, CPS revenues are limited by statutory tax caps. In fact, TIF has helped our public schools through direct construction financing, surplus distributions, and finally, tax levy increases outside of the cap when the districts expire or terminate. None of these sites generate any taxes today. They are nominal, their taxes, and they'll never generate taxes or benefit the public without significant investments in infrastructure. Each district will provide funds according to the very specific guiding principles that define the program under Mayor Emanuel. First and foremost, TIF funds will be primarily used for infrastructure like public roads, bridges, transit facilities, and other public improvements. And CDOT and our other city agencies will also continue to pursue available federal and state resources just as they do today. In and of themselves, these improvements will generate thousands of construction jobs while also accommodating the impact of the growth they will make possible. Beyond that, funds could be used for affordable housing and environmental remediation. Funds will not be used to support private economic development projects that could move forward without public assistance. This use of TIF is not a giveaway. It's an investment that could open up 10 times the total cost in direct spending. Put in perspective, if $1.5 billion of public improvements generate more than $15 billion in new private sector spending, there's no denying the positive outcomes for the city. And if the project developers who will bear the risk of the public improvement costs if that level of new private sector spending does not materialize. These mega sites are generating virtually no taxes and no investment. So every tax dollar a project generates will be brand new and will not detract from existing obligations or already dedicated tax dollars. So let's quickly go through the main sites, starting with the 78. The 78 involves 62 acres of land at Roosevelt and Clark that have been underutilized since they stopped being used for rail yards 50 years ago. Here's an overhead of what it looks like today, and it's an island with virtually no value to adjacent neighborhoods or the city itself. Last month, the Plan Commission approved a $7 billion redevelopment plan for this site, which includes the relocation of existing metro tracks to allow the integration of land along Clark Street, the current construction of a new roadway known as the Wells-Wentworth Connector between the South Loop and Chinatown, a planning goal that dates to the 60s, and a new Red Line CTA station that will provide direct access to the city's public transit system for the first time, including the $5 billion of new Red and Purple Line improvements that are completed, planned, or underway from the far north side to the far south side. The site will include approximately 13 million square feet of planned office, retail, residential, and hotel construction, along with 11 acres of publicly accessible trails, parks, and open spaces that will connect to the Riverwalk system north and south of the site. It will also generate 20,000 permanent jobs and 10,000 construction jobs, including a model program for MWBE inclusion and local hiring, $25 million for the Neighborhood Opportunity Bonus Fund, and the equivalent of 2,000 affordable housing units, both on-site and off-site, potentially including up to $200 million in lieu fees. Today, it produces nothing. This is the River District site at the southern end of the North Branch Industrial Corridor, recently approved by the City Council, which is going to completely revitalize the Tribune property northwest of downtown with a mix of uses that will also generate more than 20,000 jobs. It's a $3.2 billion investment along the river at Grand Avenue and north of Grand Avenue that will also create about 4,400 residential units, including nearly 900 affordable units in the Near North ARO pilot program. It will also generate $15 million in industrial modernization fees, $67 million in neighborhood opportunity bonus funds, and more than 10,000 construction jobs, including for minority and women-owned businesses. Today, it produces virtually nothing. Lincoln Yards is another multi-billion dollar project that will move forward within the context of the North Branch Framework Plan adopted by the Plan Commission last year, also generating up to 20,000 permanent jobs. Sterling Bay will front fund much of the critical infrastructure projects identified in the plan to address both current problems and future needs and be reimbursed by the increment it generates. And infrastructure projects include new and improved streets, a realigned Armitage-Ashland-Elston intersection, a dedicated transitway and related improvements, the rehabilitation and reconstruction of new vehicular bridges at Webster, Cortland, Dominick, and Armitage, pedestrian bridges, an extension of the 606, and other improvements. In addition to 20,000 permanent jobs, it could result in 10,000 construction jobs, including for minority and women-owned businesses, 1,000 affordable housing units among the 5,000 total units proposed for the project, including up to $100 million in lieu fees, $50 million in voluntary payments for North Branch improvements, and almost $50 million for the industrial corridor system fee that will support industrial projects citywide. This project will also provide unprecedented amounts of publicly accessible open space, including athletic fields. All of this results from a rigorous community engagement process that started almost 3 years ago, and we continue to work closely with Alderman Hopkins and community stakeholders to get the details right and to ensure that the project is appropriately scaled and balanced for what will surely become an award-winning development with high-quality head-of-household jobs. Today, this land produces nothing. A very similar community and stakeholder process is transpiring for Michael Reese, which is on a slightly slower pace but still has the same fundamental opportunities and challenges. The challenges, again, involve lack of infrastructure, environmental contamination, lack of neighborhood connectivity, including lack of access to the lakefront due to Lakeshore Drive, Metra, and the McCormick Place marshalling yards. The opportunities include a phenomenal location for high-tech jobs and neighborhood amenities that will directly connect a currently inaccessible section of Bronzeville to the near south side, to downtown, to the Obama Center, and the lakefront. We have an experienced development team known as GRIT and substantial nearby investment. We are working with the aldermen and community stakeholders to try to get a deal structure in place for this project by the end of the term as well. And similar issues must be addressed at the 425-acre USX site on the South Chicago lakefront, which is clearly the largest megasite and the hardest megasite, and will never achieve its amazing potential without critical infrastructure and investments and public support. Today, these sites produce nothing. So in conclusion, let's take a look. Seriously, I'm almost done. Let's take a look at the big picture. We are experiencing a very dynamic time for Chicago with unprecedented public and private growth and investment, including $9 billion of investment at O'Hare, $2 billion of investment by our top universities, $5 billion of investment in CTA infrastructure, $20 billion of investment in the megasites, and many other new developments which are currently underway. We've put pioneering initiatives in place to support every part of the city and to positively impact the lives of millions of people. In fact, I would assert that the programs, initiatives, and strategies we've developed under Mayor Emanuel together constitute, in realistic, viable, and sustainable terms, the most progressive development agenda Chicago has ever had and ranks right up there with the most effective and forward-thinking progressive development agendas amongst big cities in the United States today. That being said, however, there is still a lot of work to do. No one is satisfied. The mayor isn't satisfied. But the Emanuel administration will leave a lasting legacy of strong economic fundamentals and sustainable growth, significant progress in reversing decades-long disinvestment trends in many neighborhoods, and the creation, expansion, and enhancement of inclusionary tools to address both growth and equity to help meet our challenges going forward. I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you leave here today as optimistic about the prospects for our great city as I am. Thank you.
David, thank you very much. Okay, if anyone has any questions that they would like the commissioner to address, you hold up your blue card. Members of our staff will come around and pick them up. You know, Commissioner Reifman and I have a lot in common. We went to the same high school. Roger Sullivan up on the far northeast side. Oh, we may have another. Oh, that's right. It's in your ward, Joe. By the way, Roger Sullivan was the chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party in the first two decades of the 20th century. Okay. So, the first question is from City Club Speaker, one of our strong supporters, the CEO of the Illinois Medical District, Dr. Suzette McKinney. Suzette, where are you? Right over there. Thank you. Her question is, how concerned are you about the maintenance of catalytic programs like the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund in a changing administration? Or to put it another way, what happens after April?
Well, I would say this. You know, we have created a resource that will help neighborhood development. Everybody in our city is focused on the issue of neighborhood development. Our mayor currently you know, the next administration will also need it. And I think we've created a tool that will survive multiple real estate cycles, has achieved commitments for long-term implementation. And, you know, when we did this program, you know, the mayor said, you know, don't make this everything. Pick a target and hit the target. And I think as long as, you know, future administrations kind of try to stick within that and keep that resource for neighborhood economic development, I think, you know, we can trust our residents with who they vote for and our representatives to successfully carry this forward in the future. So I would say I'm not really concerned, and I think we've left a tool for people to use in a very productive way.
Okay, thank you. This is from Ken Walden, who's the managing attorney with Access Living. The question is, do you support lifting the ban on rent controls?
I would say that the issue of rent control is extremely complicated. And the experience of many other cities with rent control is not universally positive. In fact, in many respects, it's become a negative. Now, what we have in Chicago, and people don't call it rent control, is I'll call it, for purposes of my answer, backdoor rent control. Whenever we do a market project that includes 10% or 20% affordable, we are limiting the rent that is allowed to be paid for those units. So effectively, we are controlling the rent on those units for 30 years. So we have a form of it. I think we have a form that's manageable within the context of continuing to have market investment and continuing to have, and I don't mean just investment in the sense of capital dollars, but maintenance dollars, ongoing support and management of properties. And I would not want to see us get into some of the problems that other cities have. The cities that have rent control are really struggling with what to do with it and have not have had more problems than successes.
Okay, thank you, David. By the way, if any of you didn't catch every single thing that he said in his presentation, we do a podcast of this over WGN Radio, so all you have to do is tune into our podcast in case you missed anything. This is from City Club Governor Anthony Cole right down here, and Anthony's question, Commissioner, is there a plan to freeze property taxes for residents, for example, in Woodlawn?
So the issue of property tax freezes, A, has to be addressed by the state legislature. It's not something that we can do in and of ourselves. And I think we have to really look at the issue of property tax freezes across multiple communities. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about the property tax freeze in Woodlawn, but it has impacts across the board. So it has to be addressed very carefully. In Cook County, over a period of years, we've seen property tax the property tax classification for residential go from 33% to 26% to 16%, depending on when multifamily. And now all residential is taxed at 10%. We also have tools like the Chicago Community Land Trust for certain types of units that are donated that allow us to freeze taxes for certain groups. So the answer is certainly we want to address in multiple ways the burdens that certain parts of our population and our residents feel. Whether a property tax freeze is a part of it is something that will have to be determined and really looked at carefully. It's certainly a discussion topic, but I don't think there's any resolution of this yet.
Okay. Thank you. This is from Jack Levin. Jack, where are you? City Club member right back there, speaker at City Club. Jack wants to know, do you think there will ever be a goal for disabled-owned businesses for City of Chicago projects?
Well, I don't know that I'm the best person to speak to it. I think that you would want to really address this through our procurement process. Certainly when there are federal funds involved, other things that we are basically dealing with a different set of parameters like disadvantaged businesses and how that would work. But it's a large question that really needs to be led by the Department of Procurement Services. I don't know the answer as I stand here today. Certainly our goals are to achieve equity and fairness across the board. So if there's an issue of equity and fairness that needs to be addressed, it should be addressed. But I don't have a more specific answer on that particular group.
Thank you, Commissioner. Now, from listening to everything you had to say, there's only
24 hours in a day, 7 days a week. How do you do it all? And what do you do for relaxation?
I don't know, and I don't do anything for relaxation. I work all the time. So I really, you know, this is a great opportunity. It's, you know, something I'm really committed to doing. And so, you know, I find this, you know, I know it's odd, but it's not relaxing for me. I like doing it. It's so I don't really mind it. You know, I'm like everybody else. I have a family. I go home. I do things. I turn my phone off when I see the mayor's calling once in a while. Once in a while. No, we have great teams. We have great people. I don't do it alone. There are lots of people who are committed to the things I'm talking about. It's a large collective effort of lots of people in the room and lots of people not in the room.
Thank you. And the last time that Commissioner Reifman spoke here, his son was here, I think was just starting college at the time. Bright young guy, so you're halfway through paying for him. And most important, he's doing real well, which is really great. Ed Cruzat, sitting down here right in front of me, whose father was one of the great surgeons in the city of Chicago, and I were talking about one of the visuals that you showed. It was the former Schultz Baking facility on the south side there. And we were just curious, and one of the things that we enjoyed about that was the fantastic aromas and smells that would come out of that development. Any plans to bring that smell back when you reinvent that area?
No.
Folks, let's give Commissioner Reifman a big round of applause.